Welcome, members and guests, to the January 23rd program of the City Club of Eugene, What Do Neighborhood Associations Do? Thank you for joining us. Greetings to our broadcast television and radio audience. I'm Marlene Nesri, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Robert and India Hutchings at Windmere Real Estate, Marilyn Milne, Public Relations Services, and KLCC. Special thanks go to KPFF Consulting Engineers for supplying our office space, and to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights and for archiving the podcasts on their site. Thanks as well to the staff at WorkSource Lane for hosting a recent session of our careers course, which is a project of City Club, Lane Workforce Partnership, and Lane Educational Service District. A quick reminder that we host nearly 50 original nonpartisan issue programs every year. If you believe with us that civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, please do join us. We welcome donors, members, sponsors, volunteers, students, anyone with a stake in community life. We also welcome your contributions to our new special events fund. Planning has begun for our exciting launch event this spring, a program with the first female justice of the United States Supreme Court, the Honorable Sandra Day O'Connor. Look for more details in the coming week. We'd also like to welcome back returning members Mary Spilde, Larry Dunlap, and Edward McGlone. Today's program, What Do Neighborhood Associations Do?, is coordinated by John Belcher and Randy Prince. Our moderator today is Renee Kane, neighborhood planner for the City of Eugene. Renee has been a neighborhood advocate for several years and served on the Jefferson West Side Neighbors Board. She'll introduce our panelists.
Thank you, Marlene, and thank you to the City Club for hosting this program on Eugene's neighborhood associations. I'll provide a bit of background, and I want to leave most of our time to the people who really do the work in our neighborhoods. Before I begin, though, I'm happy to introduce today's panelists. To my left, Kevin Reed from Northeast Neighbors, Andrew Fisher from Friendly Area Neighbors, John Fisher, Cal Young Neighborhood Association, they're not related, Jerry Finnegan from Santa Clara Community Organization, Carlene Riley from River Road Community Organization, Joanne Gross from Active Bethel Citizens, Heather Salicki from Southeast Neighbors, and David Kolb from the Crest Drive Citizens Association. So, Eugene's first neighborhood associations were formally chartered in 1974. That makes them just over 40 years old. The emergence of Eugene's neighborhood associations paralleled a national movement toward greater community engagement in how cities grow and change. Likewise, Eugene's neighborhood associations arose out of residents' desire to be closely involved in planning the future of their neighborhoods. I want to digress a little bit from my notes to welcome Ruth Miller and Beth Campbell. You raise your hands, please. They were the very first neighborhood liaisons working for the City of Eugene. So we owe a lot to them. So fast forward to 2015, Eugene has 23 formally recognized neighborhood associations that encompass nearly every area within our city limits. Wherever you live, own property, or have a business, you're part of a neighborhood association. Formal recognition of neighborhoods means that neighborhood boundaries and charters are approved by City Council. The city provides some funding for neighborhood outreach and staff support, like me, to help them address issues or organizational challenges. The mission of neighborhood associations, as stated by the City Council in 1979, is to build community at the neighborhood level and improve the livability of the neighborhood by sponsoring neighborhood improvement projects and social events, providing a forum to identify, discuss, and resolve neighborhood issues, establishing two-way communication between neighborhoods and the city, and between neighborhoods and other external agencies, educating neighbors on issues, public process, city services, and elections, identifying and advocating the neighborhood association's position on issues such as land use, transportation, public safety, and social services, As you hear from our panel today, I think every single one of those roles that I mentioned will be covered, and you'll see that our neighborhoods are doing amazing, productive, forward-thinking work in the community. I'm honored to welcome these eight neighborhood leaders to talk for a few minutes about what their neighborhoods do and why they do it. In City Club style, we'll have time for a few questions afterwards. So let's start with Northeast Neighbors. Kevin Reed is a commercial real estate broker on the board of Willamette Family Treatment, is an angel consultant to a new startup company, Cal Young Media Pros, which is a group of 7th and 8th graders at Cal Young Middle School. He's involved in his neighborhood association to give a voice to his neighbors around quality of life issues facing their neighborhood. Northeast Neighbors is a new neighborhood association created 3 years ago. Kevin has been on the board since the beginning and is serving his second term as chair. He'll talk about Northeast Neighbors and how they're handling the impacts on infrastructure demand in their neighborhood and unforeseen consequences generated from the explosion of development occurring in Northeast Eugene. Here you go, Kevin.
Thank you, Renee. What a great opportunity to speak for you today. And as a neighborhood association, we've really, I'm just ecstatic about the involvement that I've been able to experience with the neighbors in our area. Because as you all know, we have the last of the most developable land left in the city of Eugene. So we've experienced this explosion of new growth coming on. Whether it's zoning changes, whether or not it's just new development, we've experienced a tremendous amount of growth. What also happens when you have growth is unforeseen consequences that incur no matter what development that you do. And what we did not have in place at the time was a mechanism by way in which we could address this unforeseen consequences that occur, whether it's transportation, parks, water, sewage, wastewater management. We needed some mechanism to be put into place so that we could address it as a neighborhood and also be able to pay for it as a fund. The City of Eugene has a Systems Development Fee Service, SDCs, that is a pool of money that's put together to address and deal with the future needs and the future increases in demand on the systems. And what we wanted to do is to figure out a way that we could tap that as a resource and look to the developers in the areas when they come in and do these developments, and for instance, an opportunity for them to step up to the plate while they have boots on the ground, equipment in the area, to help us develop roads to enhance the area itself and give them credit for it rather than to worry about it after the fact. Because a dollar spent today is going to be more valuable than a dollar spent 20 years from now. So putting an ounce of precaution before the need for a pound of cure is what we were trying to do when we were asking them to leave some of these system development fees behind to help us with some infrastructure development for these unforeseen consequences. Through the help of Mike Clark and George Pooling, we have been able to convince the city council that's a good idea for all of this neighborhood associations, so that when unforeseen consequences happen in development in your areas, that there's a pool of money that can be drawn from that we can fix this problem and not have to wait and put it on a CIP plan, a system, or you know, a future plan, and wait for it to happen 20 years down the road. What a great way for us to be able to address situations early on before they become so insurmountable or they become so difficult that it really makes the quality of life in your neighborhood difficult at best. So I'm standing here before you thinking originally that I was going to be complaining. Now, after last night's meeting in our neighborhood association with Mike Clark and George Pooley stepping up to the plate, with the City Council of Eugene, we have this mechanism put into place. We're really close to making it all happen, and I can't tell you how happy I am about the collaboration between the Neighborhood Association and the City of Eugene and our city leaders. This is the kind of collaboration that it takes to make a community a viable community. And I got to tell you that I've never been so, I've lived here all my life. And I got to tell you, this is the first time I'm standing before you and tell you I'm extremely excited and happy about this collaboration. It takes the collaboration between the public and private sector in order to make the quality of life as good as it is in the city that we live in. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Next up is Andrew Fisher from Friendly Area Neighbors. Andrew's a native Oregonian and works as a welder and metal fabricator. He's a 1996 graduate of the University of Oregon and has a degree in metal sculpture. Andrew has served on the Friendly Area Neighbors Board for 7 years, and he's in his second term as chair. He's been editor of the neighborhood newsletter for 6 years. Andrew became involved with his neighborhood association at the invitation of a neighbor and fan board member. He hoped his background experience and education and administration could help motivated residents and neighbors to become more informed and involved in neighborhood efforts. Andrew will talk about his neighborhood association's work, developing and improving board processes, neighborhood involvement, and communication among neighbors. He'll also touch on the group's work with partner agencies, including the city, eWeb, and 4J School District.
Well, thank you, Rini, and thank you, City Club. When I read the question, just what do neighborhood associations do, I thought I wanted to respond in general and also give you some specific examples. The best metaphor that I can think of for what neighborhood associations do is that we build bridges. You're facilitating communication between neighbors and to the city, and also you're sharing information the city's providing and trying to trickle that down to neighbors as well. You're also there to help solve problems, or at least to try to address them, but hopefully you are carving a path forward. You're also trying to preserve the character and the quality of life in your neighborhood and the things that people value and the reasons they live there. And you're also building on the work of others that have come before you. Specific achievements that FAN has focused on recently, one that you've probably read about is the Future Civic Stadium. In 2010, when we saw that the future of the longtime historic landmark was uncertain, we reached out to community leaders, the City of Eugene, Kids Sports, the YMCA, and we called together a meeting to talk about the future. We encouraged the City Council to hold a work session on the subject, and we recognize that Civic is a historic resource, and we're hopeful for a meaningful reuse. A year or so ago, when neighbors came forward who live next to Friendly Park, they said, hey, we've noticed that chemicals are being used in the park. We'd like to create a new standard. We invited City Park staff to come to a meeting, and we invited residents, and we talked about what can we do about it. And we're now in our second year of a pesticide-free adoption agreement with the city, whereby neighbors are working quarterly to help pull weeds, to make things look nicer and cleaner. And there's the added benefit of you get to meet your neighbors and make new friends. And a third item that I'll touch on is when the future of College Hill Reservoir, the access to it was uncertain due to concerns about water quality, we reached out to eWeb to have a conversation. What can we do? What came out of that was board members and nearby neighbors volunteering to patrol daily so that that space can remain open and accessible to residents. Although dogs are not allowed, people can still take their telescope up there. They can go jogging or do yoga or just even take in the view. And then the final example I would like to describe is that when the historic streetcar tracks were being removed from Willamette Street, a couple board members volunteered to help salvage some of that track and clean it up for study. We also reached out to Eugene Public Works and Wildish Construction, and through that cooperative effort, we gained a historic landmark in the form of a raised median at 20th and Willamette that includes the basalt blocks and steel rails from this 1910 system. So I think it was out of a desire to build bridges rather than walls that we were able to arrive at this positive outcome. So in summary, I would say that what do neighborhood associations do is you're trying to develop or bring into focus a vision for what you hope your neighborhood will be like. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. To be short again, and then we'll be tall after this. Joining us from the Cal Young neighborhood is John Fisher. John is twice former chair of Cal Young Neighborhood Association and is a former television meteorologist for KEZI-TV. I would also add that John is going to be really busy at the home show this weekend. John will talk about working with or around government agencies when neighborhood agendas or agency agendas are different.
Because the Neighborhood Association is the conduit to get things done, I thought I'd give people who are going to get into neighborhood associations or those who are presently there a kind of a warning of things that took me a while to learn. I have two stories for you. A couple of years ago when I was chair of the Neighborhood Association, two folks from the traffic department came in with a piece of paper, and they said, right at the beginning of our meeting, can you sign this paper before the meeting gets started? I go, well, what does the paper say? They said, well, the previous chair would just sign them, and then, you know, we could move on. So I read the paper, and it said that the Neighborhood Association approved cutting down the two trees on Willackenzie Road between next to Coburg so that a left turn lane could be put in. I said, this is exactly the kind of thing we should discuss at the neighborhood meeting. And they said, we don't have time for that. They took the papers and they left. The trees are still there. We recently had a street in our neighborhood that was designated to be improved. It doesn't have sidewalks or gutters. And so the city would like to have put sidewalks and gutters on the street so it fits city standards. But because the area was county terrain originally, the houses were a little closer together. So we had a series of six meetings, and the neighbors largely wanted to see a sidewalk on one side only to reduce the footprint of the street. We had a presentation at the beginning of the street improvement project where they showed us what they would like, and after the six meetings, we had a presentation as what the decision had been made, and it was exactly the same. There was no change. So we started to gather signatures that gave us the power to nix the project if we were able to get a certain percentage of signatures. When I went to the city hall to deliver the signatures that were sufficient to nix the project potentially, the head of the traffic department approached me in the hall and said, well, if we put a sidewalk on only one side of the street, would that satisfy the Neighborhood Association? I said, well, I'd have to go back and go through that with them because this is what those six meetings were all about. Were these, you know, coercive or just mistakes or maybe even deceptive practices? I'll let you decide, but that's not what's really important. What I want you to take away from this is that when different agencies or neighborhoods have different purposes or different agendas in mind, you might not get all the information that is available. Maybe not everybody knows all the information, but you have to dig a little deeper to find out everything. And number two, because you, as a neighborhood resident, may go into this as your one project, you're not real experienced in how the wheels turn and how things work. The folks who do this for a living are very experienced at this, and they're probably better at it than you and may be able to steer things in the direction that they perceive as best more easily. So don't take no for an answer. Be aware that your differing agendas can cause some problems. And finally, any time you communicate, you get it in email, you get it in writing, because a conversation not only disappears, you may, as the leader who had the conversation, not pass it along accurately to your members. So always get things in writing.
Thank you, John. So next up, I want to introduce Jerry Finnegan. Jerry Finnegan's been involved in the Santa Clara Community Organization since 1977 and is currently chair. Jerry's lived in Santa Clara for 50 years and taught junior high and high school in the River Road and Santa Clara area until his retirement in 2000. Jerry and his wife like to rescue greyhounds in their ample free time. So please welcome Jerry Finnegan.
Thank you, Rini. I represent Santa Clara, and you have to understand that there are two different groups out there and two different communities, and everyone talks about River Road Santa Clara as if it's the same thing. It's really not. The role of a community organization or a neighborhood is to try to represent the community and visualize its future. The River Road in Santa Clara has has a little over 20,000 people. River Road has about 12,000. Between the two communities, it's one-fifth of the city. We're supposed to represent these with a small board and whoever will show up. And so it's a daunting task for us. But we have been two distinct groups and still meet as two distinct groups. We started working together in 2000. What we have in common is River Road is a transportation artery, rather problematic one. The river, and a complex and arcane governance for both areas that include the county, the city, and a number of special districts. So these problems that we started trying to address actually in 2000, the city and the county actually asked us to get together to assess the governance problems and the service problems in the area. This was called the Urban Services Committee. And it came out with findings that the whole system was confusing, inefficient, and unsustainable, and they recommended something be done about it. In 2004, the city brought the two groups together again to try to deal with that in something called the transition team. The transition team met until 2006 and came out with a lot of really great findings in terms of the directions that the two communities should go, and recommended that the neighborhood boards, the neighborhood groups, take on this task themselves. In 2010, we did that. 2010, the two boards came together, voted to form a joint group that we called the Joint Strategy Team. And it went through all the information from transition things plus the things that happened in the meantime, and recommended that we validate the findings of the transition team and our own prejudices by reaching out and doing a massive outreach to both groups. And so that was done in 2010. We formed SCROLL, Santa Clara River Road Outreach and Learning Project. And Carlene, who follows me, I represent Santa Clara, she is River Road, who can add to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Representing River Road Community Organization, please welcome Carlene Riley. Carlene is currently retired, but in her past life, she was a secretary, mostly for nonprofit organizations. Her University of Oregon degree focused on organizational psychology. Carlene and her husband, Pat, became more active in the neighborhood as they learned about the West Eugene Parkway, the value of wetlands, stormwater, traffic along River Road, neighborhood trees, what smart planning looks like, and how they could be involved in planning a neighborhood that is more to their desires. Carlene has been on the River Road Board for about 6 years, serving as both chair and secretary treasurer. Carlene is also going to talk about how the two neighborhoods have worked together, strengthening each neighborhood, and how they've worked with the city and with their neighbors.
Thanks, Renee. Santa Clara River Road Outreach and Learning, we call it SCROLL, met weekly to forward the transition report recommendations, as we did not want to have our neighborhood problems languish for another 30 years. We were tired of kicking the can down the road. SCROLL's year-long outreach program was supported by the city's Strategic Neighborhood Assessment and Planning Award, with technical assistance, printing, and resources like maps. We met more than 700 neighbors at concerts, pancake breakfasts, the bike bridge, Latino gatherings, and business interviews to ask what was most important about their neighborhood. In 2013, SCROLL reformulated and added members to create the Santa Clara River Road Implementation Planning Team, SCRIPT, and we call ourselves SCRIPTers. The focus was on implementation of SCROLL's recommendations in five categories: land use, transportation, governance, parks and recreation, and public safety. To hear from our neighbors in these categories, we organized listening sessions and trained as facilitators and listeners. We held 14 listening sessions, 7 in each neighborhood. Each session was 3 hours long. Over 200 neighbors signed up, with 110 neighbors actually participating. We asked questions about concerns, possible solutions, worst fears, and best outcomes. Neighbors shared in-depth verbal and written comments. Their knowledge will provide the basic underpinnings for our area plan and address other specific problems. Public safety is one example demonstrating the barriers our neighbors encounter. With a patchwork quilt of annexation, genuine confusion occurs when a 911 call comes in as to whether the city or the county law enforcement officers will respond. The sheriff's department has little or no staff to respond to property crimes unless a violent threat is present. The Eugene police officers are not privy to crime data that the sheriff's department collects. If an accident occurs on River Road, which officer responds depends on whether the city or the county owns that portion of the road. It is unpredictable at the least and a dangerous situation at the moment of crisis. Scripps Next Steps are convening a group of neighbors in in-depth participation in implementing solutions. We anticipate cooperation from our city partners to provide help with additional outreach to neighbors beyond our regular members. We need current information about how to make our streets and neighborhoods more safe. The city's technical assistance is needed to develop our area plan with predictable policies. The patchwork quilt of governance needs to be more rational. Maintaining neighborhood livability and accommodating new residents are neighborhood values. Protecting our agricultural land for food production, providing a community center in Santa Clara, and planning for a multimodal transportation system to serve all ages and lifestyles are necessary ingredients for our desired neighborhoods. We're ready to quit kicking the can down the road and join in participation as a whole community.
Thank you, Carlene. We're next going to hear from Joanne Gross from Active Bethel Citizens. Joanne is past co-chair of ABC, as we like to call them, and she joined the Neighborhood Association Board in 2010. Joanne is an urban homesteader, serves on the Eugene Sustainability Commission, that's an appointed position, and she's the mother of 2 young boys. Joanne volunteers in her neighborhood and city because she wants to make it a better place for her kids to grow up in. Joanne will talk about Bountiful Bethel, a neighborhood project that addresses food insecurity and limited access to healthy food in her neighborhood.
Hello. Bethel is a huge neighborhood. We're the largest in Eugene, and we have a lot of challenges. Our neighborhood organization has been very active in many ways, but since I have a short amount of time, I'd like to focus on my favorite project, which is Bountiful Bethel. Back in the fall of 2011, ABC saw that there was a high level of food insecurity and a lack of access to fresh, healthy food in Bethel. So we worked with other organizations, such as the Bethel School District, the Environmental Center of Sustainability, Community and Schools Together, city councilors, and neighborhood services staff through the SNAP program to develop Bountiful Bethel. Bountiful Bethel is a neighborhood scale project that has a very broad scope. We got pretty excited and we envisioned things like community gardens, neighborhood gleaning programs, a Bethel directory, food buying co-ops, community kitchen networks, and farmers markets, all sorts of things. we may have got a little ahead of ourselves. So in 2011, we began the SNAP program, and I'm not sure if it was the greatest fit for this project. The SNAP program for us was a bit wonky. It was vague and bureaucratic, and we weren't used to that. And it may have been a bad choice. We may have been more successful if we had gone other routes. But so be it. A process that we expected would take about 6 months took us about 3 years. And we lost a lot of momentum. We lost volunteers. And it almost killed it. But we decided to be flexible and be creative. And we pursued partnerships with other organizations. The Southtown Rotary, Native American Education Foundation, Huerto de la Familia, and Beyond Toxics have stepped up to the plate. And we've received assistance and funds to help with a first urban farm site, which is on school district property. And this, right now, very soon, any minute, we should be getting the water being put out to that site so that we can grow our first crops this year there. Let's see. What we learned from this process is that it's important to be persistent. Don't give up and be flexible. You don't always have to work within the confines of government protocol for your neighborhood associations to get things done. Sometimes it's more effective not to maybe organize in a different way. Our first priority is to serve our neighbors and not the city government. What I learned through this process, and also in my ways of being active in other ways for my neighborhood, is to be brave, be an advocate, and just show up. So sometimes, you know, don't be afraid to say what needs to be said so that injustices and problems in your neighborhood get addressed. Thank you very much.
Thanks for showing up, Joanne. Next, we're going to hear from Heather Salicki at Southeast Neighbors. She's been on the board of Southeast Neighbors for the last 3 years and president for the last two. Heather's professional background is in electronic communications, technical writing, and crisis intervention. And like most of our neighborhood leaders up front, you understand that they're involved in more than their neighborhood. Besides her work with Southeast Neighbors, Heather's a co-chair of Camas Ridge Elementary School's PTO, Parent Teacher Organization, the coordinator of the Eugene Springfield Eco Schools Network, and an active member, I should say a very active member, of the Southeast Eugene Community Emergency Response Team, also known as CERT. Heather will talk about communication and outreach, how Southeast keeps neighbors informed and interconnected, and how a neighborhood association can be a gateway to democracy.
Thank you. So there are more than 13,000 members or residents in the Southeast Neighbors boundaries, and trying to find ways to communicate in a timely, relevant manner is one of our essential functions. And communication's always been a passion of mine, so that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to tell you what we communicate, how we communicate, and why we communicate. So one of the things we did first is we wanted to find out what people cared about. And in 2011 and again in 2014, we did surveys with neighbors. And some of the things that people like in Southeast Eugene are trees, nature, green. They like the quiet. They like that, you know, you're close to the city, but you're also close to nature. And some of the things they come and talk to us about are safety concerns and ecological concerns. So that's what we communicate about. We communicate about land use, emergency preparedness. We talk about park improvement projects and news from our neighborhood schools and businesses. Our board members pay attention to what's going on in the community, and we kind of filter that out so that our neighbors might have a common understanding of local issues. Currently, some hot topics include locating cell towers. cell towers in a residential area, building stronger connections and ties with our local schools, and a land redesignation from parks and open space to residential. So how do we communicate? Our board meets monthly. We always have public comment, and it's often a place where we hear out a myriad of complaints and find ways to help people resolve them. Sometimes we're the first place that people kind of join up with the system, and even if they've been voting their whole life, they may not know how it works. So in that sense, we kind of guide them through, and we can become the gateway to democracy and informed citizenry, really helping to encourage people towards responsibility and action. We have quarterly meetings. In the 90s, we had paper newsletters, in the O's website, email lists, and in the 10s, we've adopted Facebook and Twitter, and we have a twice monthly email newsletter communication that goes out. So why are we spending so much time communicating? I mean, certainly it's great to have neighborhood improvement projects and work together. We build community that way, but we can't reach all 13,000 of our residents by going door to door in this reality. So we do what we can to find ways to bring people together. At best, our neighborhood association acts like an extended family, which residents can identify and take pride in. We want people to feel that they could support one another and try to make the place where they live a better place for themselves and their families. We don't view ourselves as being part of a community because we live in close physical proximity to someone. We view ourselves as part of a community in view of the common virtues of our experience and how we care for one another. So we try to help keep neighbors informed and interconnected. And in doing that, we strengthen relationships between people and organizations within the neighborhood. We're all dealing with the same puzzle, different pieces. And hopefully together we can build a foundation for collaboration and transformation. If any of you live in the Southeast neighborhood, I encourage you to join us and sign up for our newsletter. Get involved. It's a great organization. And join us at the Amazon Headwaters celebration at Tsunami Books on January 31st. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Lastly, we're going to hear from David Kolb from Crest Drive Citizens Association. David's a retired professor of philosophy and has taught in Japan, Chicago, and Maine. He moved to Eugene in the fall of 06, joined the association because of concern about development near his home, joined the board, then became chair for, as he says it, a long time. David is currently board secretary and for some years has been doing an email newsletter, which, again in his words, people say they find useful. David will talk about increasing community and interaction, increasing connection within smaller areas of the neighborhood, and preparing for emergencies. His neighborhood is also looking at an increase in property development. David will talk a bit about his neighborhood's oral history and Lafferty Park projects, and will concentrate on the Crest Drive Street redesign and what can be learned from that process about communicating within the neighborhood.
Thank you. We could say things about a very successful oral history program. We could talk about the Lafferty Park improvements and other smaller things. But I'd like to concentrate on the street design because I think there is something interesting to learn from it. It started out as one of these neighborhood versus the city things. The city proposed to widen the street somewhat like you'd heard before. People thought it was too wide. It was going to be a standard procedure. There was a considerable amount of protest. And then to everyone's perhaps surprise, the city said, okay, let's sit down and negotiate a design that would work. This meant the formation of a committee. The committee turned out to be internally divided in various ways. And eventually a plan was approved, and it was implemented. And I would say the plan as implemented achieved most of the goals that the committee majority wanted. That is, it slowed down the traffic, it cut the amount of traffic, it stopped the street from becoming a feeder road, and it didn't take away a whole lot of trees, and it avoided moving out some people's garages and things like that. But there were costs. One cost was it was just financially expensive, because the city policy at that time was that it was paid for by the people who lived along the street, and it was a quite expensive project. People found themselves faced with thousands of dollars of fees, in some cases tens of thousands of dollars of fees. And secondly, there was a cost in that for the design to do what it was supposed to do, it made the street rather difficult to drive. It's rather narrow. They have a bunch of strange dividers in the street at various points, and a lot of people complained about that intensely, and still do. So it was a very divisive thing inside the community. Now, this is interesting because Crest Drive, which, by the way, we're going to rename as Southwest Hills Neighborhood Association, Crest Drive is a relatively homogeneous community of almost all homeowners. It's not as economically diverse as some, and it doesn't have a lot of rentals and almost no students. Nonetheless, we found a tremendous division inside the community because, according to a survey that I've looked at, about a third of the people really like the improvements and about two-thirds don't. Now, the question is, what happened? There's a lot of if we had, if they had, if only going on. There was a problem, I think, of internal neighborhood communication. There were a lot of public meetings and consultations which the committee held, and some people came to them and many people didn't. That was one problem. They needed to somehow improve that. But I think the more deep-meaning problem was people had the cost on their mind, and they wanted something done. Nobody wanted the streets to stay in the state of disrepair they were in. But people, A, didn't focus on the design, because designs are very hard to understand. And secondly, they were concerned with sort of overall goals and figured things would go well. The problem was to get people who reacted negatively later to have seen the problems with the design that they should have seen earlier. And that was a problem both on our part, we weren't able to communicate. I came in late in the process, but that was one problem. The other part was that the people didn't really pay attention until it began to bite. So there's the difficulty of getting people involved in large enough numbers early enough. And that's a problem, as Heather would say, of communication, and we have to work on it. Thank you.
Thank you, David, and to all the panelists.
Yes, thank you to Rini and all the panelists, and we'll break for a few minutes now to have some discussion and come back with our questions.
You're listening to KLCC, NPR for Oregonians, in Eugene, 89.7 FM, KLCC, KLCO Newport, 90.5, KLFR Reedsport, 89.1, and at 88.1, KMPQ Roseburg, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet.
Welcome back to the January 23rd City Club program, What Do Neighborhood Associations Do? City Club members, please identify yourselves and keep your questions to about 30 seconds each. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Marty Wilde, City Club member since, I don't know, 2010. Our table was interested in the sort of inherent conflict between, you know, state law and good planning, meaning that as cities grow, they need to densify, versus the sort of the fate of the West University neighborhood, which went, you know, from basically all owner occupied to no owner occupied in a fairly short period of time in an unplanned way. And so what we're trying to, you know, the central tensions we were looking at was that, and what role should the neighborhood association play in informing that process? It seems like some have said nothing about it, and some have opposed basically all development. How do you strike the happy medium there? Nobody in particular, just whoever might have.
Sure. So John Fisher, Cal Young, it's required when a new development goes in that a presentation is made by the developer. But for the most part, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the zoning of the property decides what will occur there, not the neighborhoods. It's more informational than it is that you add in. You can make suggestions. They might take that. But if it's zoned for apartments, it can be apartments.
Anybody else on the panel want to address that? Andrew Fisher?
Yeah, this is Andrew's fan. I'm kind of the opinion that this development is going to take place. And what I hear from neighbors is sort of a common sense response that the densification is most appropriate around the corridors, where you have the public services, where you have your the services. I think that kind of densification is less appropriate when you're talking about established neighborhoods and single-level homes. And I think that's where you would find that there'd be more objection to that kind of densification, perhaps.
So out in the Northeast Neighborhood area, what we found is that it's the shock of finding out something's happening that they didn't know was going to happen, and it's kind of it's a new thing. I think that what we've been able to do over the last year is open up better communication with the changes that are coming, because densification means more people, and please understand that. That's the hardest thing we've had to teach our people, is that densification means more people. More people means more cars, more bikes, more people. And so with saying that, getting people involved by saying, you know what, you have a voice, and creating a platform and an opportunity for them to be able to speak to that concern is very, very important. So we went from 25 people at our meetings to 55 people at our meetings, because they're learning, they're being educated, and they have a voice of their concerns. So,
Jerry Smith, City Club member since 2003. In all neighborhoods, our friends and neighbors face rapid middle-class economic decline. They lose their jobs, they lose their homes or apartments. Where can they go in your neighborhood?
I'd like to be the first one to speak to that. We have the most affordable housing being built in the entire city. We have Bascom Village is going in. That's 101 new units. We have over 1,000 apartment units that are going to be built in the next 2 years. That's not to mention what's already happened over the last 2 years. So we think that there's a diverse development of affordable to all sorts of individual housing going on in our area of town. And so we're open for business. Come on out. Join us.
I think Joanne wants to speak to that as well.
Hi. Being from Bethel, I have seen a lot of the impacts of the type of social or wealth inequity that you're speaking of. We have a lot of families who are working and they're just not able to make ends meet. From what I've seen in my community is Bethel knows how to come together and organize and help each other out. And I think when times like this are hard, it's important that people come together and share and help strengthen each other so that we can be more resilient.
I'm John Adick, City Club member since 2003. I noticed that several of you were talking about dealing with problems that involve multiple jurisdictions in multiple, more than one area of government in order to deal with certain problems. Given this complex nature of government that we have in Santa Clara County and unincorporated areas, did I say Santa Clara? Sorry. Lane County. Okay, let's go on from there. Given the nature of this, do you think that government would be more efficient and easier to deal with and simpler if Eugene and Springfield formed their own metropolitan district, separating themselves from the most of Lane County, well, certainly Florence and areas up in the mountains, and follow the example of other areas of the country, and I'll give you a couple. Miami-Dade County in Florida, Marion County, Indianapolis, which has combined the city and the county governments, and then also Metropolitan Toronto, which has a slightly different structure.
These could be examples. Do you think Eugene, Springfield area should study the possibility based on your experiences in dealing with governments?
I think that question is tailor-made for Carlene or Jerry to start with.
Yeah, I don't think I can deal with that directly. That is a lot larger vision than what we're working with. Santa Clara and River Road have kind of a problem, not a problem of that can be solved with unification, but it can be probably solved mostly with annexation. But historically, that's a very difficult hill to climb, and we're trying to determine whether or not services, like for instance River Road Park, services that are now separate can somehow be combined into some kind of a unified district, the city then becomes an odd out man player, and you start combining our service districts. And so as soon as you have a problem, you want to create another service district to address that problem. That's one of the reasons we have so many problems. It really needs to be more unified. Going back to the former question about how people are suffering financially, as soon as you start talking to people, the River Road is not too much different, but people in Santa Clara, and saying, hey, you're going to have to pay $2,000 more a year because we're going to, you should belong to the city, you can see how that becomes a real hard issue for us.
Carlene Riley, River Road. From my perspective, what we're finding in our neighborhoods is that some neighbors have an identity with the city in the metropolitan area. They work in town, they want to go to events in town, whereas other people identify with their neighborhood and they feel close to the River Road parks and the schools. And so it kind of depends more where their emotional ties are rather than whether a governance change would be the best for them.
Are leaders aware cell towers are now proposed in neighborhoods and near schools? For example, a proposed Crossfire Church AT&T tower would be 1,000 feet from Parker School, soon to have kindergartners. Will neighborhood associations work to strengthen Eugene's cell phone tower ordinance? And would the three women please respond, since women seem to be more vulnerable to cell tower radiation, as seen in the Tanya Israel study, indicating 10.4 times increase in cancer for women, especially breast cancer. Thank you.
Heather Slicky, Southeast Neighbors. I'd like to respond that one of the things as a neighborhood association we'd like to do is make sure that the protective provision that's in the existing ordinance is followed, where there's a mandatory independent peer review of the technical information behind all applications at the expense of the applicant. That way, when we're putting cell towers in place, we know, are they absolutely necessary? Is it possible that we could co-locate one vendor's signal with another? We just want to, our ordinance can be strengthened, but I think that if we follow what we have, that'll be a good start too.
Judy Sawyer, City Club member since about 2010. Our table wanted to know whether you, as heads of your associations, meet together as one association of associations, and have you ever advocated for one another or helped each other, and can you give us some specific examples of how that's worked for you?
There is an organization called this is David Kolb from Crest Drive. There's an organization called the Neighborhood Leaders Council, in which one representative of each neighborhood comes, usually the chair, but it can be an appointed other person. And that organization meets monthly and discusses issues that seem to be pertinent to all the neighborhoods. and offers experiences. Someone will say, I need help trying to figure out how to do X. And someone will say, well, we tried such and such, and it seems to work well. So there is a lot of that, and also it's a function where the city, people from neighborhood services or other departments address that organization, and the information gets carried down, or in some cases, protests and other things get carried up.
Examples. One example, I suppose, is the fact that with the tightening budget with the city, they've pulled back a lot of monies from the neighborhood associations, especially in communicating with our neighbors with newsletters and stuff. And so, and there's been a lot of brainstorming and strategizing with the Neighborhood Leaders Council trying to determine how we can fill that gap. Another example, Kevin Reed over here in Northeast Neighbors, and his problem with trying to use the system development charges appropriately for his neighborhood. He came to NLC, and we have an NLC committee that I'm on that is helping him do that.
Anybody else want to speak to that? Okay.
Hello, Diane Conrad, City Club member. Has anybody found a more successful way in avoiding dialogue from turning into us against them when you're trying to communicate with the city on issues maybe the city is struggling with?
This is Kevin Reed with the Northeast Neighbors, and I'll tell you, as a facilitator and the chair of the Neighborhood Association, my job is to create an opportunity for us to get educated and to be able to communicate. And as that facilitator, this isn't an opportunity for people that have passionate views within your neighborhood to have stones and torches to attack the people that are there to educate us. And so because of that, we've taken our meetings from 25 to 55 people and been able to bring some of the best speakers from the city and really important dignitaries to share with us their wisdom and their knowledge, because they feel safer or more relaxed instead of having to field passion and aggression. They get to be able to share their wisdom and their knowledge. And once you have that ability to create that platform for them to speak, you'd be amazed at how much you can accomplish and how well you can communicate. So I would highly recommend that if you are part of a neighborhood association, that you set that groundwork early on so that everyone can learn from it and also feel safe enough that their opinions will be heard and not met with a bunch of negative dialogue.
Andrew wants to speak.
Yes, this is Andrew Fisher with Friendly Area Neighbors. Just to add, avoiding us versus themism, I think an important theme is to invite everyone to the table early on and to try to get that conversation going from the very beginning, all of your stakeholders, and an ongoing effort that I think any board or any board member might focus on is that you're always reinvesting in your relationships with your community partners. You're building them, because it does take time to build trust, and hopefully if you can build on one successful experience, then you can, it will follow, there will be more.
Go ahead, Jerry.
I want to comment on the bulldozers in the backyard syndrome that all of us have had to deal with. You get not too much interest in your meetings until a bulldozer appears in somebody's backyard, and then you get a whole source of people at your meeting. And so just to underline what Andrew said about communication, try to get things people involved early.
I think we have time for one more question.
Randy Prince, City Club member. I'm also involved in the neighborhood. I think probably about 10 years in the Amazon neighborhood, and I got involved because it was kind of the bulldozer in the backyard thing. It was like they wanted to change our bikeway with a bunch of concrete and everything. And I said, I think I'll start going to those meetings. And it turns out a lot of times that's what builds up the membership and interest in neighborhood associations. And it can be negative. Sometimes it's frustrating. I wonder what you have found over the years, is say if you win those issues or there just aren't any bulldozers coming in your neighborhood, what keeps people coming? You know, what positive things, or what keeps up the interest when you don't need to go on torchlight parades?
Joanne?
This is Joanne from Bethel. We have a little bit of a different situation in Bethel where I guess people have spoken out in the past and not had issues addressed at all and not felt listened to. And there's a lot of apathy now. People feel like, well, why even try? Because I'm just going to waste my time and no one's going to listen. So that's been a challenge for us. But the way that we've found to relate to our neighbors and get people involved is to focus on the positive things that are fun, that really anybody could connect to. And I think food is one of those things, which is why I like it so much. So we've had a good response by having a harvest festival and around this urban farm site I spoke of earlier.
Thank you so much, all panelists and coordinators and Rini. We appreciate your input and thank you for bringing clarity and vision to this complicated issue of what do neighborhood associations do. And thanks again to our sponsors, Windermere Real Estate, Marilyn Milne Public Relations Services, and KLCC. We meet again on January 30th at the Downtown Athletic Club for the Public Trust Doctrine, Will Courts Protect Natural Resources, with special guest speaker Mary Wood. Lunches for this program can be ordered on City Club's website or by contacting the office. And thank you again so much for being with us today.